realfaith.org.au.
While we're in Port Moresby, I got food poisoning. And so I went to a local doctor, happened to be an ex-student of ours. So he comes in and I said, oh, the administrators came round and wanted to know how I'm going to pay for it. He said, pay for it? He said, you're my papa. You're the one who directed me to become a doctor. It just so happened he owns the hospital. And he said, you're not paying for this. You're my papa.
Welcome to Real Faith. Conversations about the impact faith has on our lives and the challenges we go through. Helping us today and giving us hope for tomorrow. That's Real People, Real Life and Real Faith with Eric Scatterbo.
Once again, our guest is David Odd, former missionary to PNG. Last time we were talking to him about how he came to be a missionary in Papua New Guinea and then became a Christian. So that was not the usual way that people become missionaries and go on to the mission field. So we heard that story. Actually, what happened, just briefly to recap, he went there to serve as a school teacher and then met a local ordained minister who had been a translator for the Billy Graham Association. Through his association with them, he put his faith in Jesus Christ and then met David Odd, who was serving at the local school there, and then led him to the Lord as well. So then he became a Christian 5 years after being there. Was that right? It was about
Correct, five years into it? Yes, it was 5 years.
Okay, and so you served for a total of 23 years as a missionary in Papua New Guinea.
Correct.
But that was not consecutive. It was three different stints?
Yes, three different terms. Our first term was on New Island at a high school. That was for 11 years. Came back to Australia for about 19 years and then was called again to New Island to establish a Bible college.
And the reason why you came back was because there was such a revival during your first term that you wanted to help those people grow. Is that right?
Correct, yes, yes. But the original idea was to establish the Bible college a lot sooner than that.
Not 19 years
later. No, no. But for various reasons, it was 19 years. So we went there and, that Bible college took off. And so after 6 years, I had trained up a local man to take it on, so he took that on. Then I came back to Australia and went into business for 6 years. Then was called again to start another Bible college in Port Moresby. So that was a further 6 years. So three terms altogether, mm-hmm. and 23 years all up.
So you helped to start two Bible schools, which are currently going and being run by the locals.
Correct, yes.
And we should say that the person who led you to the Lord, the local ordained minister, his name is Ben.
Yes.
You've been friends with him for all these years?
Yes, yes. Still in touch, and he's still ministering.
Going strong?
Oh, I mean, he's in his 80s now, and 80 is a very old age for that country.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Wow, that's great. So, and you've maintained that friendship for all those years.
Certainly do. Hope to go back and see him this year sometime.
Oh, okay. Maybe we'll have to find out your new adventures with Ben.
Yes.
Okay, well, now we want to talk to you about God's miraculous provision. So during those 23 years, during the three different stints you were there, there were times when you were in need, which happens to all missionaries.
Yes.
But God miraculously provided at the last moment in miraculous ways just what you needed at just the right time.
Correct.
Well, let's hear some of those stories.
Okay. I guess one of my favorite ones is provision of some shoes.
Shoes. Now, shoes. Who would think shoes would be a big deal?
Well, it was.
But it is kind of nice if you don't have them.
Yeah, okay. This is during our first term at the high school. Mm-hmm. And I had almost from the start, just didn't wear shoes in Papua New Guinea.
You were a teacher?
Yep.
Without shoes?
Yep. But the locals were the same.
So like, that was the usual thing?
Well, thongs were, they'd flip mud up your back. Boots would rot out within a very short time.
So it wasn't practical?
No, it was just so muddy and wet and so on. Feet were the best form. So
I would imagine that the soles of your feet were pretty tough after
that. Oh, yeah, they got pretty tough. I played squash once, and the guy couldn't believe it that I played squash without shoes
on. Is that
on,
right? So, so you could probably strike a match on the bottom of your feet.
Well, not quite that.
Oh, no.
But, yeah, they were tough, yeah.
Okay.
And what's more, the New Island is a coral island, and coral is pretty sharp.
And you're walking around without shoes.
You're walking around without shoes, yes, yes. So, at the school, we had a week at the end of the year, which we called our Community Outreach Week, where we divide the students into groups of about 12, and they'd go into a village and do community work there, possibly help, you know, an old person with their garden, establish a garden for them, or repair a house, do something in the local church, whatever. And so one day we had a group which went to the other side of the island. Now, New Island is a very long, skinny island. And to get to this place, we had to drive down about 70 kilometres, then over the mountain, which was the backbone of the island, and then up the other end of the other side of the coast. So this group was there, their week had finished, and I went in the truck to pick them up. On the return, I went, picked them up, and we'd been going for about 4 or 5 kilometres, and the truck blew up. Literally blew up. The engine just, that was it.
Smoke all over the place?
Not so much smoke, but the conrod just went zoom, and fortunately it went down, not up, because if it had gone up, somebody sitting on top of the engine would have been.
Oh, wow. Yeah, not a pretty picture. Okay.
No, yeah. Not at all. So that was it. No thought of being able to repair it. It was totally done. So I said to the students on board, right, you go and find some accommodation in the nearest village. Myself and this other student will walk over the other side and see if we can get something to...
You mean all the way back?
Not all the way back, but over to the other side of the island, because this particular side we were on, just hardly any vehicles, certainly no repair facilities and so on. Yep. So I start out on this coral road, and we're going...
With no shoes.
And we're going up the mountain, gets dark, we're walking on coral, going up the mountain, so you place your foot and it will slip, and so on. And so despite having tough feet, I was starting to really feel the pain. So God said to me, well, pray for a pair of shoes.
Just out of the blue.
So here we are in the middle of the jungle.
It wasn't like there was going to be a shoe store pop up. This was just all with
jungle.
Didn't
exist. Yeah. And no villages even. Just there. And so, yeah, being the man of faith and power that I was, I said, yeah, Lord, it'd be great to have a pair of shoes. Amen. That was my prayer. And just a short time after that, along the road, we see this light approaching. And so it comes along, and here's this guy with a lantern. And we say... He's just walking. And just spoke to him, said... Where have you been? I've been over the other side of the island fishing. Now, why would you leave one side to the other to go fishing when there's plenty of fish on the side?
I don't know.
So that was one. So he just looked at me and he said, would you like a pair of shoes?
Really?
Yeah. And I said, oh, I would love a pair of shoes. Now, at that time, that was so unusual. Papua New Guineans didn't have shoes. And if they did have, they'd be such a valuable thing for them, it'd be difficult for them to give away. Do you want a pair of shoes? Oh, I'd love a pair of shoes. Gives me his shoes. They fitted. And
just wait, did he take his off?
He took them off and just gave them to me.
Really?
Yeah.
You don't know who this person was?
Never met him before and never saw him afterwards. I believe to this day it was an angel.
Oh, wow.
And here were the shoes, and I don't know why, but I lost track of the shoes. I would have liked to have kept them. But there we are. Yeah,
provision. Just at the right time.
At the right time, the right size. I mean, if I hadn't got those shoes, I would have would have been very difficult to complete that.
Yeah.
Because I was less than halfway through the journey.
So you were able to get them...
Able to finish the journey, get onto the other side of the island, find somebody who could come over, pick up the students, tow the truck back and put a new engine in the truck.
Wow. God's marvelous, miraculous provision.
Absolutely.
At just the right time.
Yeah.
Our guest today is once again retired missionary David Ott, sharing about how God provided just what was needed at just the right time while he and his wife served in Papua New Guinea. Next, David will share more of his incredible stories of God's miraculous provision when we return right here on Real Faith.
The Word for Today is Australia's most widely read daily devotional, designed to give you practical teaching to keep you focused on your relationship with Jesus. Read it online or subscribe to the free printed edition at thewordfortoday.com.au. You're listening to Real Faith, conversations with real people about how God works in their lives. If you want to know more about integrating faith into your life, our website is realfaith.org.au. Just go to the website and you'll find helpful articles about the impact faith can have on your life. Once again, that's realfaith.org.au.
Welcome back. I'm Eric Scadabo, and our guest today is once again retired missionary David Ott, sharing his incredible stories of God's miraculous provision of just what was needed at just the right time while he and his wife served as missionaries in Papua New Guinea.
So, in our second term, establishing the Bible College, we'd bought this old vehicle. Sorry, let me go back a little bit. When I first went there, I met with the bishop and a few of the senior men on the island, and they said, "Yeah, well, we've called you to start this Bible college, but we don't have any buildings, we don't have any money, we don't have any teachers, we don't have any students, and we don't have a curriculum."
But other than that,
we're real set. And I said to them, I said, "You're asking, or you're concentrating on the wrong things." I said, "Does God want this Bible college?" "Oh, yeah." I said, "Well, then who will provide?"
Wow, that's faith.
Okay, so we started off. And after a year or so, I got this old truck. Now, it was an old truck. When we left to go anywhere, it was debatable whether we'd come back.
Hmm.
You know, whether it'd break down.
Might want to bring some shoes along.
It was just not, yes, a little bit like that. So here we are with this, and we had a work group come up from Australia to help us with some buildings. And on that work group was an older man who'd been a pastor of a church in Australia. He was also a builder, so he was, and he came into the town with me one day, and he said, "David, what are you going to do about this transport? Because the truck's pretty old, and as you've said, you know, sometimes it comes back, sometimes it doesn't." I said, "Oh, well, I'm just saving and believing, and that's it. That was all we said.
Mm.
The previous year, I'd said to the students, "God is going to provide us with some transport, and it's going to be good transport." And that was that. All right, so this man went back to Australia, and about 3 months later, I received a phone call. And he said, "David, if you really had your wishes, what transport would you like?" I said, "I'd get a 3 or 4 ton truck and a twin cab utility." "Okay," he said, "how much would that cost?" So I quoted him reconditioned ones. He said, "No, new ones. What would new ones cost?" So I quoted him. Now, in those days, this was in about 2001, I think it was. In those days, they would have cost the equivalent of about $120,000.
Wow.
So he said, "Okay, go and order them." I said,
"Wow.
What?" "Yep, go and order them." "Yeah?"
Is there more to this?
Yeah. So, yep. "How?" Well, he said, "I was pastoring this small church. We were an aging congregation. We weren't getting any new converts, so we decided to just fold up. But we have some money, and we wanted to support some missions with it. So part of that money is going to go to your vehicles.
Oh, well.
And so I said, you know, what? Well, he said, I came up and saw your need, and that was it. So here was this little group. There are only about 30 of them. They've been going for a number of years, but faithfully tithing.
Mm-hmm.
And I just looked back and I said, God, you knew even then that there would be a need here. And so you got this group to start putting away money and there. And so here we are. So I went and ordered the trucks. Now, the man I was working with who was going to take over the Bible College, I said to him, come into town. I didn't tell him why.
Oh, he didn't know.
He didn't know. Come into town. So we go to town and walk past this place that's selling the vehicles, and here's the truck and the ute. We walk past and said, gee, it'd be nice if we could have something like that, wouldn't it? Oh, yeah, he said, that'd be great, wouldn't it? Yeah, right. So we went and had lunch. On the way back from lunch, I said, see those vehicles there? Yeah. I said, they're ours. And he just started crying and jumping up and down and so on. And before we went into town, I told the students, now at that stage we had, I think, about 50 students. I said, okay, now you're all to assemble in the classroom. And I gave them a time, and I said, there's not one person to be missing. And they thought they were in trouble.
Mm.
And so this other man, Eluda was his name, Eluda and myself, drove up with the new vehicles, and here the students went wild.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I told them God was going to provide, and they saw the provision.
That's fantastic. Now, I want to go back to the school in general. Now, you started off not having anything.
Yes.
How were the other needs met?
Like that's a good question, Eric. I can honestly say I don't know. When we had a need, the money was there.
So buildings,
we're building
teachers.
A house. We needed corrugated iron. And a local businessman had said to me, yeah, I'll pay for you corrugated iron. So there was that.
Now, you went there knowing that they didn't really have all the things technically that you needed to have a Bible school.
Didn't have a thing. They had some run-down mission buildings, old mission buildings, which they were about to bulldoze. That was it. And yet, when we went, we needed some timber. The money would be there for timber. And I perhaps should have kept a detailed diary, but it just came in a bit here, a bit there, a donation from a local.
So one by one, everything you needed to start this Bible school, so teachers, curriculum, the physical buildings and everything?
Yep, correct. Yep.
And it's still going?
Still going. And so when we left, after 6 years, we had two classrooms, three dormitories for students. We had 30 small houses for married students. We had the trucks that I've just described. We had mowers to mow the grass. We had chainsaws, furniture.
Wow.
Staff houses.
Abundant provision.
Abundant. And there was not a time where I thought we needed something and we couldn't get it. Now, I'm talking about needs, not wants. But when we needed something, it was there. I'll give you an example from our own personal finances, because we went there without any formal support, if you like. We were there by faith and trusting God that he would provide. So one morning I sat down at the breakfast table with my wife, Beryl, and said, money's run out. We don't have anything in the bank or, anyway. Okay, so we looked at each other over the table and started grinning. We said, well, what's God up to now?
I don't think that would have been my reaction. And I definitely know that would not be my wife's reaction.
Right.
You and Beryl are very special.
Well, fortunately, yes, we are. We didn't stress. There's no stress. So the bishop, who lived on the same campus as the Bible College, went into town that day, came back in the afternoon, handed me an envelope. And open the envelope, and there's the equivalent of $400 in the envelope.
Wow.
I said, well, who was it who gave this to you? And he mentioned a lady, never met her before in my life, didn't know who she was. So $400, that's a fortune.
Yeah.
For a Papua New Guinean.
Yeah.
And here it is, there's God's provision again. And just when we need it.
Wow.
And we've just proved time and again that when you trust in him, yeah, I'm reminded of Matthew 6:33. Seek first the kingdom of God and his righteousness. All these things will be added to you. And that includes material things as well as spiritual gifts and mm-hmm. the wisdom you need, whatever.
Yeah.
All these things will be added to you.
Now, in honor of the local language there in Papua New Guinea, could you say that same verse in Pidgin English?
Okay. Pine him past time, kingdom belong God. Now behind all get us something, and we come along you.
Okay, so there were a few words in there I recognize in English. So Pidgin English is obviously a combination.
Yeah, it's not actually Pidgin English, it's Melanesian Pidgin, because the structure of the language is a Melanesian language. Mm-hmm. The vocabulary is a mixture of English, German, Portuguese, mm-hmm. Dutch. It's a trade language, if you like.
I remember hearing that a bicycle is called a wheel-wheel.
Wheelie-wheel, yeah.
Wheelie-wheel, okay. Wheelie-wheel. So for the two wheels. I always wondered what you would say if an 18-wheeler went by.
Yeah, well, you wouldn't. You would not repeat wheel 18 times. You say, big bullet truck.
Oh, okay, there you go. Now, looking back on your three stints in Papua New Guinea and all of the different challenges that you faced, both financially and last time we were talking about spiritual and demonic opposition and all that, do you think it was well worth your time and energy and the effort that you and Beryl put in?
Wouldn't change one day of it.
Is that right? What's the most fulfilling thing about it all?
Becoming a Christian. Going up there to do good works, unsaved.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, what would have happened if we died before that?
Mm.
The Bible tells us it's not good works that save you, it's faith. And so that's the absolute pinnacle. But the others are just seeing the change in lives,
mm-hmm.
seeing people without hope finding hope, seeing people who came out of a village, you know, just subsistence village, and now doctors, accountants, just marvellous. Could I tell you one more story of provision?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay, while we're in Port Moresby, I got food poisoning. And so I went to a local doctor, happened to be an ex-student of ours from the first term.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And that student, when he was at the high school, at the end of year 10, he had to put in an application for what he wanted to do beyond year 10. He put in that he wanted to be a mechanic. I said to him, I think you have more potential than that. Try to go to university. So he did that. That was the end of it. So then, here I am with this food poisoning, turn up.
How many years later?
Oh, about 26. So he says, look, you're going to have to go to hospital. So he puts me into hospital. And I'm there that night, and the next morning the administrators come around and said, well, Mr. Rod, how are you going to pay for this hospital stay? Now,
because they need to know.
They need to know, and it's expensive. I said, look, I'm not sure. I'll have to talk to the doctor. So he comes in, and I said, oh, the administrators came around and wanted to know how I'm going to pay for it. He said, pay for it? He said, you're my papa. He said, you're the one who directed me to become a doctor. It just so happened he owns the hospital. And he said, you're not paying for this, you're my papa. So, okay, so I stay, I think it was 3 nights, and then on the day I'm discharged, comes out, he says, yeah, it looks like you can go back. He hands me an envelope, and here's $1,000 in it. Here's
wow.
And, you know, it's just, that's the sort of fruit that I see coming out of our work. It just, that God is providing all along the way,
mm-hmm.
and then just to reinforce it or to make it even more special, he provides that sort of thing through mm-hmm. one of the people you helped so
yeah.
many years.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Before. Yeah.
Your cup runneth over.
Amen.
Well, that's fantastic.
It's beautiful.
So it's so much more than just the provision of the finances.
Oh, yes.
It's the lives that have been changed.
That's right. Yeah, that's the most precious thing.
Yeah.
Change lives. And, you know, people without hope now, pastors bringing hope to others.
Wow, that's fantastic.
It's good.
Thank you so much for sharing your stories with us today.
Thanks, Harry.
You've been listening to Real Faith. And if you have any questions or comments, you can send us a message through our website, realfaith.org.au. That's realfaith.org.au. Thanks for listening, and we invite you to join us again next time for more conversations about God working in the lives of people who put their faith and trust in Him. That's real people, real life, and real faith.
This program is a production of Vision Christian Media. To find out more about us, see vision.org.au.